the last spoken Fuegian language.
Good morning. I'm going to have to read from the computer because there was no time to print the paper. Okay. Kawaskar is the only Fuegian language that is spoken today. However, there are only 7 speakers who use the language in their daily interactions. These speakers live in the Fjord Zone of southern Chile, also known as Western Patagonia, and are settled in Puerto Den, a small village in Wellington Island. I'm going to show a picture. All this is the Kawaskar Zone, where they live here. This is Wellington Island. It's a very large island, 7,000 square kilometers. And this is Puerto Eden. Most of the non-Kawaskar inhabitants of Puerto Eden are of Mapuche descent, which is the most important indigenous group in Chile. There are some speakers who left Puerto Eden some decades ago, living in Puerto Natales and Punta Arenas, but they don't use the language because they live isolated. A small number of semi-speakers born in the 1960s who belong to the last generation to learn Kawaskar as a first language have moved to the cities in the south or the north and stopped using the language except sporadically when they visit their relatives in Puerto Den. Descendants of this generation and others who had migrated to the cities in the 1940s and 1950s, marrying Huilliches, which are also Mapuches, in Punta Arenas and Puerto Natales, never learned to speak the language. They constitute nowadays the so-called urban Kawaskars. The Bureau of Indigenous Affairs, known as CONADI, has registered 279 persons who belong to this group. Some of them are not really Kawaskars, but claim to be descendants of some old relative dead long ago. That's because they can get some scholarships. Linguistic documentation of Kawaskar dates back to the 17th century. I distinguish two kinds of documentation. A, informal, represented by data gathered by early explorers, geographers, naturalists, or missionaries after the discovery of the Magallanes Strait, and B, the modern linguistic one, which started in the 1970s. The informal documentation is composed of numerous lists of words and some sentences, but an important number of items lack accuracy. Comparison of these informal records confirms that just one language is spoken in Western Patagonia, with at least 2 dialects, both mutually intelligible, with only lexical differences, I confirm from data gathered with the last speaker of the southern dialect. Modern linguistic research on Kawaskar comprises the work done by Christos Cleris, Alberto Salas, and myself. During the second half of the 1960s arose an increasing academic interest in this ethnic group. Anthropological as well as linguistic field work was carried out in the zone, and Kawaskar started to consider their language as a cultural asset they had not realized, with some speakers in Puerto Den who became very collaborative informants. All this work was done with academic interest as the only way to preserve linguistic and anthropological data. The Kawaskar community was not meant to be beneficiary of the gathering information. During the 1980s, there was a decrease in research and field work, and the people in Puerto Den complained they never saw the results of the research projects carried out with their cooperation. They wanted to receive the results of these projects, reports, publications, and the like, no matter the scientific language, for they wanted to show that they and their culture were important and not a group of people with no value, who were now civilized thanks to the contact with other people who had come to Western Patagonia, first as sea lion and otter hunters, and then as settlers. The 1990s saw a revival of cultural interest regarding Chilean indigenous peoples. In 1993, the so-called Indigenous Law was promulgated. For the first time, the government recognized Chile as a multicultural country and proposed to develop several policies which were aimed at the promotion and conservation of the idiosyncratic values of Chilean ancient peoples. The purpose of this law was to protect the interests of the different ethnic groups and to rescue, make known, and revitalize all their cultural expressions. This way, the Bureau of Indigenous Affairs started to fund a program of revitalization, mainly because of the Orenka Huascar who did not speak the language, show their concern. For them, it was important to have something that could show they belonged to a distinctive cultural group, and the only possible distinction was the language of their ancestors. The first concrete action began in 1998, when I proposed an alphabet, which was later accepted as the official alphabet of the language. This is the That is the alphabet. Then follow a Kahuascar reference grammar, the first primer, and Spanish Kahuascar dictionary published in 2003. A Kahuascar dictionary a Kahuascar Spanish dictionary by Professor Tonko, who is going to also read a paper next Saturday. And myself is in progress. We have completed a first volume from letters A to H, but since it is a dictionary with usage examples, quotations from our corpus, and some necessary anthropological information, its editing is slow. My first corpus was gathered between 1975 and 1984. It contains 648 short texts, some songs, and anthropological data. Texts have a length of 10 to 15 seconds. The longest lasts 5 minutes. They were recorded first on magnetic tape and then on cassettes. Part of this material has been digitalized and it is entirely transcribed and translated. It was the base of all the description of the language I published between 1975 and 2003. In 2006 and 2007, both Professor Tonko and I started a project funded by the regional government of Magallanes with the participation of the Kahuascar community of Portiden. Two teams were formed. Professor Tonko and I work in Santiago with informants, and a Kahuascar team formed by Juan Carlos Tonko and Maria Isabel Tonko as assistants worked in Portiden. The main purpose of this project was to gather as much as possible ethnographic and linguistic data, which otherwise would be lost. The two main authors who have described Kahuascar culture, Martin Lucinde in the 1920s and Joseph Amperea in the 1950s, present some inaccurate information which needed to be updated. The creation of a Kahuascar sound archive was a long desired project by the younger members of the community, for they didn't want to lose their heritage. Therefore, it was the community itself that proposed and promoted the realization of this project. The project was included in the revitalization program, and it had also a training for prospective Kahuascar teachers. The first part of the training was done in 2008 after the completion of the sound archive. The Kahuascar team of Puerto Den was also trained in elicitation techniques in Santiago, and we also use internet as a means of communication. Through email and experimental site, we provided instruction and information. However, due to the instability of internet in Puerto Den, we had to limit the communication only to email. The recorded material in Puerto Den was sent first by our assistants to Punta Arenas by ship, but it turned out to be very hazardous, and later the informants who would work in Santiago brought recordings. All the material was recorded in mini discs, and it was digitalized as soon as the daily sessions finished in Santiago and as soon as we received the material brought by the informants in each of their trips. The selection of the informants was made as follows. The whole group of the speakers could have been informants, but some of them had health problems, had been hired to work in fishing and shellfish gathering activities, or weren't in Puerto Den. Therefore, we selected three speakers, a woman of about 70 years old, with whom I had worked before, and was a good narrator, and had a splendid knowledge of the ancient tradition. The second informant was a man of almost the same age, with the same characteristics as the female informant. This person was particularly valuable because he turned out to be the last experienced storyteller. Most of the myths I have recorded before were very fragmentary, and the informants claimed they didn't know the tales. However, what they didn't know was the way tales had to be told. The last most reputed storyteller wasn't living in Puerto Den when I carried out my first field work, and neither in the successive years I went there. This speaker died in 1980, and I never had the opportunity of meeting him. The third informant was younger, 48 years old, and had an enormous knowledge of Cahuéscar language, customs, and techniques. In fact, we were very fortunate to work with these persons who were really committed to their work. The first informant was Gabriela Patarito, who traveled with her daughter, Maria Isabel Tonco, one of the assistants. Maria Isabel was trained in Santiago, where she learned how to proceed with the questionnaires. Her mother had plenty of experience as informant, therefore the test was carried out very easily. During 2 days, we asked questions, and the informant answered in Cahuéscar. However, she told us that for her it was better to speak without interruptions, and she herself established a session duration of 2.5 hours with a 30-minute break. We worked from Monday to Saturday in the morning, and the rest of the day was free for the informants, while Professor Tonco and I checked our notes and digitalized the recording material. To record the sessions, we used the Sony mini-disc recorder, Sennheiser microphones, both in Santiago and Puerto Den. The Sony recorder worked well, but whenever we used it connected to the power supply, it produced noise. When we operated it with battery, the recordings were optimate, and fortunately we have 6 sessions with noise, but this isn't too much considering the work during 8 months completing the sound archive with sound files of an average duration of 2 hours each. Work in Puerto Den began a week later than Santiago the first time because the two informants who remained there weren't in the village. When the first informant completed her month's stay, she returned to Puerto Den, and a few days later the second informant arrived. When the second informant left, the third arrived. This procedure was employed for 3.5 months, from September to December, and interrupted in mid-December due to Christmas and New Year's celebrations. Since since both Professor Tonco and I had to travel to Puerto Den in February, we did not receive any informants in January. During our summer field work, we had to organize the Council of Cahuéscar Language as part of the requirements of the project. Therefore, during February 2007, both the Santiago and Puerto Den teams worked in Puerto Den. Professor Tonco and I returned to Santiago in March and we received again our informants starting the cycle again. The only variation was that in April, the second informant, Raúl Eden, arrived while Gabriela was a student in Santiago. This was done with the purpose of recording dialogues that were to be used by teachers in the revitalization program. When both informants returned to Puerto Den, we concluded the recording sessions in Santiago. The Puerto Den team worked for 1 additional month, and this part of the second year, the project was completed. The rest of the year, Professor Tonco and I classified the recording material, digitalized the recordings received from Punta Arenas, and started to transcribe and translate texts. The corpus contains travel narratives, autobiographies, myths, procedural texts, for example, hunting and gathering techniques, dialogues, and drill materials for Cahuéscar teachers. By the end of 2007, we had transcribed and translated story to travel narratives and a long text describing the geography of Callao Island and near territory. To digitalize the recorded text, we use sonic stage software provided by Sony. To process the sound file recorded in WAV format, we employ WaveLab. This software was very useful above all because we could write annotations on the WAV file. We used natural pauses to mark boundaries for the transcription. Sometimes these pauses can respond to a paragraph or part of paragraphs. Each pause was marked with a number, therefore it was very easy to find segments that require further examination. Sometimes during the transcription, Professor Tonka and I did not agree, and for a more accurate analysis, we copied the conflicted segments and processed them using Speech Analyzer, a software produced by the Summer Institute of Linguistics that allow us to reduce the speed of the sequence. The same process can be done with WaveLab, but it requires more time. As I said before, WaveLab is a very useful software to process sound. Unfortunately, it doesn't work with Windows Vista. Maybe now this problem may have been solved, but it is a very expensive software. Transcriptions were handwritten, and once checked, we used Microsoft Word to produce a clean copy of them. It took us 5 or 7 days to transcribe the text. The translation was a longer process and it usually lasted 2 weeks. We produced a raw file of the bilingual text, and afterwards the final version was a two-column bilingual text. For the gloss text, first we used Word with the template I had made and macros to copy and paste each Kawaskar lexical item to the template. This process was not a hard work, but filling the empty slots with the glosses was very painstaking, boring, and it took too much time. When the first text was fully processed using this method, we sent it for our publications. For publication. Afterwards, we used Language Explorers, the Explorer, developed by the Summer Institute of Linguistics. It is a very good tool to do interlinear glossed text. It builds a dictionary and stores all the grammatical information. However, with long text, it is slow and memory demanding. It can export files to Open Word and Microsoft Word. However, in order to export files to Word, it must use a macro that in our case never worked, maybe because our texts were too long. The Open Word conversion is good, but it is necessary to make changes once you have exported a file because the styles used not always is what you want and editorial requirements vary. For instance, it produces source language lines in italics, and in our case, we use that only for the free translation and loan words in the Gawaskar text. The use of both commercial and free software is a good help for linguists, but it is very annoying to do the successive conversions to reach a final neat product of a publication. Our corpus has increased the information we possessed of Gawaskar. We have found new suffixes, particles, and idioms not contained in the previous corpus. My description of the order of words will need to be updated, for the rhetorical resources found in the new text have shown that the order of words is not so rigid as in the previous short text. Ethnographic information is huge. This will help to correct former erroneous interpretations of anthropologists, as well as to add new and known knowledge of Kawaskar culture. We don't know how long it will take us to process the whole corpus, but we feel satisfied because we have contributed to preserve, together with the last speakers, the heritage of one of the most ancient peoples of South America. Thanks.
We have time for questions, so.
Well, I have a question. I was interested in your orthography, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the process of developing that. I noticed you have the K and the R phonemes both have two graphemes.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about those choices?
Yes. In the case of R, it's similar to Spanish. We have a multiple trill vowel here, the second one, and the orthography is similar to Spanish. That was to help Kawaskar people who are going to learn to read and write. Mm? And K, well, the second one is an adjective. For instance, the word neck, elaf. That is why we have two K's.
Well, actually, I wasn't asking about the two K's. I was asking about the K phoneme here and then the X grapheme for the K phoneme
yes.
there.
It is the same phoneme. Mm? For instance, it can say car or ha with the same meaning.
So is it for the allophones, for the
yes,
different allophones?
Yes, allophone.
And a similar question about the C, the second C, I can't see so well.
Also an adjective. Mm?
But is it a, okay.
Mm?
yeah. And the one previous to it is just a palatal C, plain. The one above the adjective.
And we have and
okay.
See?
And the Q
and
is
our phonemes. The Q is ka.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can distinguish a minimal pair, for instance, har to kill and har take grasp.
But there's no adjective Q?
No adjective Q. That would be too much.
We still have time for questions.
Maybe you would like to know why we work in Santiago and Puerto Den and why we brought the informants to Santiago. Well, that was because when you work in the place where the informants live, there are many distractions, visits, and all those things, and we wanted a full-time work with them. Mm? That's why we brought them to Santiago. And, well, they loved it. They have gone to Santiago before, but they love doing this trip.
Any more questions?
Can you tell us a little bit about the revitalization side of the project, and are the materials that you've been developing, are they used in the schools, or how does those pieces fit together?
They are together. My throat is quite dry. It is very difficult for me to speak. In fact,
I have water.
Excuse me. I have water.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that's better. Well, this is a government project, and it is very slow. When we started the revitalization project in 1998, the government wanted first an alphabet. Next year, a grammar. Next year, a dictionary, and so each year, a product, as they call it. Well, I told them we could do parallel work. For instance, the alphabet could be done parallel with the grammar description, that you don't need a whole year to do an alphabet. Well, they understood and allowed us to have parallel work. But the real revitalization has not started. Mm-hmm. First, Professor Tonko and I wrote the manuals, basic, two volumes of basic for exercises and all those to learn to write and read. And now this year we are working in an advanced volume. Mm-hmm. But the real teaching of Kawaskar, it is possible that this year start. We don't know when, but they announced it in the newspapers and a lot of propaganda of the local government.
We have no additional questions, then I think we'd like to thank our speaker. So we have about 5 minutes and we'll start the next talk at 11:30 following the instructions I was given.